Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at The Gaslight, the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard, right over there on the hill in St. Louis, Missouri. Come over there, check it out, man. It's just a cool hangout over there. It's a really beautiful facility they have. If you haven't been by, it's a top-notch recording studio attached to a great bar. So if you have a band or you are a solo artist, you can come in to the studio and you can cut some live tracks in front of an audience. The audience is on the other side of the glass in the bar setting. And so even if you're a fan, you can come in and watch one of your favorite bands and have a cold adult beverage there and hang out. It's just a real neat place. So get involved, check them out. They're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find everything else at GaslightSTL.com and full listing of events coming up there. So always got a lot of really cool people coming through, national acts as well as all your favorite locals. So get involved and check that out. So also sponsoring this episode is Music Record Shop. They're back, just moved over to a new location on Washington Ave over by right next door to KDHX. So go check them out down there on Washington Avenue in St. Louis, Missouri. New records in every Friday, live in stores, and next one is October 29th. You can come in and see Lucas Jack live in store at Music Record Shop. I follow them online, also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Nathan Gilbert from the River Kittens. You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast with Shane Presley.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Thank you.
Without you, I might not exist.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today with Nate Gilbert. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, this is exciting stuff. A lot of these have been starting this way. Like I have all these friends around town, people I've been meeting, new friends and stuff, and we've kind of been running around in the same circle for a little while.
Yeah, I keep bumping into you at a Broadway Oyster Bar.
Yeah.
Been doing some shows down there. Keep seeing you.
Sure. And then, of course, River Kittens shows. And
yeah, and you had Richie on the show, too. Rich, so you've kind of been right in and out of all the bands.
Yeah, but it was, I think the most we got to talk was just the other night at Funk Fest.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, yeah, man.
Great party.
For sure. But a lot of this, gives me a good opportunity to get to sit down in a little more quieter atmosphere and get to know you a little better and stuff, and then just have some fun. So,
well, hopefully it's quiet. I got a couple friends who are with me tonight. Actually, one of my friends, Andrew, drove up here on a motorcycle from Nashville on his way to KC.
Yeah.
And we went to Berkeley together in Boston and actually got a track we made together years ago. You're talking about meeting new friends. And,
yeah.
You know, he's an old friend I haven't seen in years. It's just kind of serendipitous he's here tonight. So I thought I'd play a track from him.
Very cool.
Later on. Thank you.
But yeah, I was thinking, like I said, Funk Fest, man, and that was my first time. I know it's like their 11th year putting that together, and like that was my first time being in part of that, and it was just really well.
It was my first one as well. I'd missed it the past couple of years. A lot of the shows you want to go to when you play around a lot happen to be on the same days you're playing, and luckily I got a chance to actually play at Funk Fest, so I could go to it.
Right.
So that's nice.
Yeah, I watched you play two sets, one with Transmatter Express, and then another with Richie Kilkin Band. So.
And that was fun. That's always nice having back-to-back sets. You can leave all this stuff up and get a quick changeover. I've actually done that a couple times. Charlie Serpa, who was playing with both sets as well, he actually broke the... I think he's the record holder this year for most sets at Funk Fest. He did 5 sets over the weekend, which I think is pretty impressive.
Right.
And but me and Charlie were on a festival the other day where we played in 3 bands in a row. And the first 3 bands in a row of the day, it just seems to be happening to us a lot.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I never really thought about it much before, but like doing this show and getting to know all the different players in town, and there's so many of these guys that are in 4 or 5 bands, like you were saying earlier, you do some fill-in gigs and stuff. I mean, so you're on call for some other groups sometimes. So, there's all these different groups that you may have been seen with and stuff, and it's just like it's pretty crazy to how many how active some of these guys are and stuff.
It's weird. This scene that I'm kind of in the middle of, the Richie Kilkin Band, Transmatter Express, Blank Generation, River Kittens. All those groups share a lot of members.
Yeah.
And then those people are also in the People's Key. They're also playing Big and Micah Geary's band. And so it's kind of like, if I'm at the Richie Kilkin show, the people who are on stage are a part of like probably 25 or 30 bands. All right, between all of them and all the sub gigs they do, it makes even more. And it's just a weird little circle. It's a fun circle, though. Those are really fun people, everyone in all those bands. And, Mike from People's Key, for instance, there's a lot of people like him who, we grew up together. We played in Music for Dogs and Stone Sugar Shakedown way back in the Lafayette days. And when we were 15, 16. And I know a lot of people like that. This is a family in St. Louis. And, I used to think that you got gigs based on solely how good you could play, but now I'm starting to realize that a lot of these people get these gigs just because they're real pleasant to be around.
Sure, yeah.
And that's a real nice thing when you get a big group of people who all there's no acclimation period, there's no getting used to it, you're just everybody. It doesn't matter what gig you're on, if it's a totally new set of music, you kind of make it work.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part of it. We just seems people enjoy playing shows with people they like being around, and it's a good excuse to get to hang out with your friends. So,
well, vibe is a real important thing on stage. There's a lot of bands on stage. I mean, bands in town that I see on stage, and there's a lot of tension. And some bands I'm in have some tension, but it's important to keep that part mentalized, because if you ruin the vibe of the band, everything kind of goes to shit really quick right after.
Yeah.
You can't really feel, you get self-conscious on stage, you get resentful or something crazy like that. And so there's really just no place for it.
Right.
And it creeps into some bands. But, I'm kind of blessed right now to not have to deal with that really in any of my groups. So that's nice.
Yeah. You touched on, you said Berkeley. Stuff and playing at 15, I think. When's I like going back a little bit and getting some backstory and things. How you got to where you are today?
When I was really young, my mom always played piano, and so there was always piano in the house, and she was always playing it. And I did, like, instead of normal preschool daycare stuff, I did a lot of like music camps and stuff like that at a young age, and doing piano, and piano was kind of my instrument until I was, I don't know, middle school age, and I gave it up. I just didn't have time, wasn't interested in, more interested in, like, I don't know, MMOs or something, or playing online games, stupid shit like that. And when I was around 14 turning 15, my dad took me to PJ's Pawn up on Hanley and Page, and we bought a cream white Mexican jazz bass, and he was like, just fucking do anything except for play video games. Like, just do something, for Christ's sake. And you know, it was kind of snapped me out of it. All of a sudden I had people to play with. I for some reason I never really took to jamming with people on piano at that age, but with bass it just kind of was like, oh, this makes sense. And, I don't know, I was kind of a wild kid. I don't know what it was about my circle of friends out there, if it was my older sister's friends, or just everyone's older sister's friends. I don't know where it came from out there, but, you know, there was, you know, I guess when I was 15, I was more interested in smoking pot and playing bass than going to school, and so I dropped out of high school and just played bass all the time. And the deal I kind of made with my parents was that I'd drop out of high school, but I'd go to Merrimack for music. Or for anything, really. They didn't care. They just wanted me to do something.
Yeah.
So I ended up at Merrimack, and I did music, and my first two semesters were a disaster. I didn't take it seriously. I was a 16-year-old kid in college who was like, if I don't skip my classes, nothing happens except I fail. And I guess that part snuck up on me. So I had to basically redo those two semesters my second year at Merrimack. And I don't know, I got my act together a little bit. And got a little scholarship to Webster. And I had been doing ensembles there while I was still at Merrimack. And then I went there full time. Stayed in the dorms and everything. Had a kind of weird experience there. But met a lot of the people now who I'm really good friends with, like Charlie Serpa was at Webster at that time. Mike Morano was at Webster at that time. The drummer from Blank Generation was at Webster. Andrew Gibson was at Webster at that time. You know, a lot of the people who are in the scene now were coming up at Webster, and we all had Willie Akins, who was just this wonderful saxophone player, may rest in peace, and teacher there. And, you know, there was a lot of other great teachers, Tom Byrne, Dave Black, etc., etc., goes on. That scene is actually, a lot of the players came out of there, yeah, who you see around town at Funk Fest and
right
on that scene. Ryan Marquez was there at that time. John Lum from Richie Kilkin Band was there at that time.
Yeah, man.
Nick Savage. It goes on. List goes on. And I spent like a year there, and I got tendonitis and kind of didn't know what to do, and kind of hid it from everyone. Kept trying to do my classes and was falling behind, and basically just like ended up having a real bad second semester at Webster and moved on to Berkeley. Kind of did it on a whim, just wanted a fresh start. You know, when you're 16, 17, 18, a lot of kids have this, they hate St. Louis even though they have never known it yet. You don't know St. Louis,
right?
And if you're under 21, you haven't had access to a lot of the good stages, at least I didn't at that age. The way I got around it was fake IDs, and that time I played in a band called Nonstop Reggae, and they just assumed if you're playing with a bunch of people in their late 40s, you're probably at least 21, so you'd get in. Played a lot of gigs during these times, the Merrimack and Webster times, with Nonstop Reggae, with Jody Carter and Doug Green, and the old Red Sea. Do you remember the Red Sea off Del Mar?
No. I don't think I ever went there. I've heard stories from other, you know, other players around town, but
oh yeah, it was a weird little, you know, a lot of people had their first gig in the basement. Yeah. It was this musty ass basement. They had way too loud punk shows and high school shows and whatever. It was an sure. Ethiopian restaurant.
Yeah.
Oddly enough. And then upstairs they would do jazz shows and they do reggae Thursdays. And Nonstop Reggae would pack the house. They also were on the swag stock. Every swag stock they would get to get a set. But you know, it's kinda my earliest professional band experience was with Nonstop Reggae during you know, times I was like 16 through 18, 19. And, Kelly Williams, one of the baddest bass players in town and drummers in town, played with them. He plays with a lot of touring reggae bands, and I learned a lot from them. But yeah, at some point, though, I just kind of wanted a fresh start. I had this illusion that if I went to Berkeley, you know, everything would fall in place. And I took some scholarship money I weaseled my way into and moved up there on a whim before I even got accepted, you know. And worked at a music shop, Daddy's Junkie Music, hawking guitars and basses and stuff. And lived in a... lived on the floor in a one-bedroom that I split with a dude I had met when he was touring Webster. Some little metalhead from New York. And I slept on the floor for months or on a shitty blow-up mattress. And around the same time I got accepted, I moved back to St. Louis for a short amount of time to pack up the rest of my stuff and get really prepared for school, and came back and moved in with the dude who's hanging out outside, actually, Andrew. We had a studio apartment that we split. It was still like $1,300 for the studio.
Huh.
And it was just like a weird U-shaped thing on the end, on the corner. And we split it, and he had a ferret that would run free in the apartment named Loki. It was, you know, I was sleeping like on a futon in a sleeping bag, and Loki, I'd wake up and this ferret would be like biting my toes and shit, man. And it was ate up that apartment. And we were just doing these wacky parties, and you know, when I first moved in there, we had a few weeks before school started, and you know, we had really nice speakers and recording equipment and a lot of records, and we just had a lot of fun because everyone there was musicians. We could just jam any time of the day. Imagine being at a party and everyone around you is, you know, a great musician, with very few exceptions. It's just like, you could just hand a guitar to anyone and you have a 50-50 chance of them being able to really play it.
Yeah.
So you had some awesome spontaneous jams there, and it was a really fun scene. And I spent probably 2008 through 2012 there, and really, you know, I learned a lot of lessons in St. Louis I wasn't ready for, from Willie and from the staff at Webster, from Tom Byrne, an excellent guitar player who, you know, I butted heads a little bit with when I was at Webster, and it was mostly because I just didn't get what he was trying to tell me. And I feel like Berkeley really allowed me, it didn't really give me anything new except for an environment where I could jam all the time.
Right.
Just the saturation of good musicians was really nice, but the school itself, you know, they just reiterated the things I learned at Webster and Merrimack and from my private teachers like Bob DeBoo in St. Louis. And I just had time to process it, and, you know, it was a good humbling experience because I met a lot of people who, at 18, 19, will outplay me for the rest of my life, you know what I mean? So it kind of puts you in your place and
Sure. Lets
you know that you have to carve out your niche, and, you know, it's always, there's always someone out there who will painfully remind you of your inadequacies if you dwell on it and let them do that, or you can just, you know, try to find your own voice and not worry if it's, you know, a virtuosic one,
right,
necessarily. You know, I moved back from Berkeley and in 2012 and was just eager to get back to St. Louis. I've been, you know, coming home obviously periodically, and I noticed I've been having more and more fun in St. Louis each time I came home, and to the point where my last semester at Berkeley, I was just really homesick. I just really wanted to come home. And I was hearing the music my friends were making in St. Louis, and I was really impressed. And realized, like, you know, it's kind of the path of least resistance in a lot of ways. And I went back to St. Louis with the goal of just touring regionally. While I was at Berkeley, I also had linked up with a St. Louis band called the Rockin' Jake Band and spent several months, you know, hitting both coasts. We did, I think, like 30,000 miles in the course of a few months.
Man.
And, you know, just all over the country. And that was really eye-opening because they were all based, they didn't have to be in New York. They didn't have to, to be, you know, living in Boston, paying $1,400 rent. You know, they can, if you have good enough for band, you can promote yourself, and you have reliable transportation. You can tour out of any city, and if sure. I love St. Louis, and that's where my roots were, and that's where my friends were, why not?
Yeah.
I want to come, so I came here to build something, and over the years, I've played with a lot of bands. I've played with, you know, I'm not sure if you've met Dan Roth and the Broth. He was an old friend. Played with the Dusty Brothers with him back in the day.
Yeah.
It's another band I played when I was at Webster. Nick Argas, another guitar player. Awesome country band. And, you know, when I came back to St. Louis, it was really just about rebuilding bridges that I'd kind of, you know, a lot of relationships I'd let go by the wayside when I was out of town. And, you know, these people who you thought you knew years ago now are, you know, totally different people and 10 times the player that they were when you first knew them. And, you know, it's kind of like starting over when you move back here. And so, you know, I've just kind of spent the past 2 years getting in and out of the music scene. Right. You know, it's one of those things, you get a lot of momentum and then things slow down and it's kind of, you start thinking if maybe you should get a normal job and then things pick back up and you were fully engaged again. So I've kind of, you know, just been struggling to make it consistent enough. That's always the struggle, is making your gigs consistent enough that you don't have to resort to the normal job.
Right.
And sometimes it means living real lean, and sometimes it means, you know, you have a really shitty month.
Sure.
But
it is crazy how many of these guys I meet that are, like, you know, just world-class players, and, like, I don't know. I guess it's me being naive when I was younger and stuff, but I always just imagine, like, you know, some of these guys that could play would, you know, just have would have no problem. Like, just that was, you know, they could find, you know, bands and jobs playing and stuff and doing all this, and it's like, but then, like, now, I think probably some of that's also changed with...
Let me put it this way. Do you have a family member that makes a really good pie or casserole? Sure. Who makes the best dish in your family?
Oh, I don't know.
What is it, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be the best. What's a really good one? I don't want to hurt any feelings. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, grandma, you know, she would always knew how to do it right. I don't know. I can't think of like a...
Like grandma's green bean casserole.
Sure.
Why not?
Here we go, yeah.
Let's say grandma makes the best green bean casserole in the world. She's not going to make as much money as the canned green casserole, and it's not half the product. You know, it doesn't matter. I learned that a lot of times the people who are obsessive over their technique or their ability without the context of, you know, business acumen or relationships or just the networking aspect, they actually really can repulse people. There's a lot of people I know who are, you know, even virtuosos, incredible musicians, who are just kind of jerk-offs.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's one of those triangles. You ever see those triangles where it's like work, sleep,
sure,
grades or whatever, you know, like pick two.
Yeah.
You know, you can either be a jerk-off, or you can be, have no business acumen, or you can be not that good at your instrument, but you can't be more than two of them at once.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. But, you know, I know a lot of people who aren't the absolute best player. I know they aren't the absolute best fit musically even, but I know that I can rely on them. I know that they're, going to show up dressed right. You know, John Lum is the rare example of someone who is really, really good, really, really professional, and really, really fun to hang out with. John Lum, the drummer for Richie Kilcan Band and for the River Kittens, is always on time. He always is bordering on overdressed, always sharp, and it's just one of the funniest people I know. And, you know, that's really rare. And I think that's pretty, like,
I wish if I was as professional as John Lum, I'd probably be a lot more comfortable. Who knows what kind of, I don't know. Maybe we'll be in the same place. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, I really admire people who can balance all that, and there's very few. I know of John Lum's probably my closest friend who really has all three of those things always on lock. But yeah, there's a lot of people in St. Louis who just, I mean, it obviously comes with the craft, you know. You have to be kind of crazy or, you know, really love it. And
right.
A lot of times it's a source of release for people of the shit they normally talk to psychiatrists for. So there's a lot of emotions and weird shit that happens in the music scene. And people can be flaky. But, you know, it's par for the course. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that's kind of what, you know, when we tell stories of, you know, legends, it's almost like we glorify all the fucked up drama. And then we talk about it over and over again. And when you're a kid and you learn about rock stars and you watch Almost Famous and all these rock star movies, you know, they're all just really glamorous shitheads.
Yeah.
And then you get to be an adult, and any of that behavior is completely unacceptable in the scene for the most part, you know. And I think a lot of people kind of struggle with that. So, you know, alcohol destroy a lot of good careers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, some people can't be in a bar situation and not drink. I just fall asleep, so I can't drink on a gig. I've learned that lesson pretty young. It just doesn't work for me. I can't have... My tolerance is so low. It's pretty bad. I think I get that from my dad. He actually gets headaches if he drinks like more than a glass or two of wine. He's...
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen him drunk in my life. But a lot of people, a lot of my favorite musicians in St. Louis, that's why they're in St. Louis, is because they drink. And I'm not judging them. I'm not saying that it's any negative emotional these are people I love, and I'd love them whether or not they're drunks. And because that's not who they are, it's just a little part of them, but it's what's holding them back. And, you know, today, for instance, I was doing some stuff for the River Kittens. We had recently gotten all of our stuff on iTunes and Pandora and Spotify, all that stuff. And we're registering with ASCAP, and now we're registering with Sound Exchange. It's like music is one of those endless abysses of work. If you get up and look for it, there's an endless amount of work to do, both in the business, marketing, development side, and also in your personal life. There's an endless abyss of work. And I feel like there's two types of musicians: people who obsess over the work and make it a routine and do it over and over, and really just get it all done or the, as much as they can, and they don't mind diving down the rabbit hole. That's not me. I can't. I mean, I try my best.
Right.
And there's people like me who... it really takes a lot of willpower to dive into these tasks because I know that they're fruitless and there's no end to them. And once you finish one, it's like, now that you've registered with that, you have to register with another thing. And now that you've booked this show, you need to book another show in support of it. And, you know, it's an endless abyss of work. And at the end of it, you fade to obscurity and die. So it's, you really have to love the process. And a lot of people don't love the process. A lot of people love being on stage. I love being on stage. And I am pretty interested by the process.
Yeah.
I love practicing and things like that and jamming and rehearsing. And I love that part of the process for the most part. But I don't love the logistics and the paperwork and the background side of it.
Sure.
And I feel like a lot of the people who get out of St. Louis are the people who have those things in balance. They love the craft enough that they sit down like big boys and girls and take care of all the paperwork and the business. Something that is pretty daunting. I mean, you know, there's a lot of decisions you have to make because to do it
to do it big, you have to treat it like a business. You have to, you know, make certain commitments and decisions that are exactly the kind of commitments and decisions people get into music to avoid. You know, they have to make businesses and raise money and go out on a limb and buy equipment and potentially go hungry for all these things that they're working constantly for. It's not like a whimsy anymore. It's your sink or swim reality. It's like opening a restaurant. It's fucking crazy.
Right.
Most of them fail.
Sure.
You know, I think restaurant owners and musicians are kind of in the same level of crazy to even try to do what they do. But yeah, there's a lot of bands in St. Louis where if they had linked up with a great business manager, or if they just love their love that side of the craft, they, you know, if your band has a lawyer in it by any chance, you know any lawyers who play bass?
Yeah,
you should give him the him the gig, because it'll make things a lot easier. But that's a big thing that I really kind of find myself thinking about. That's one thing I'll tell you about myself, is that I spent a lot of time pretty much just doing nothing and zoning out and thinking about stuff. I like to listen to no music in the car and just think.
Yeah.
Not like about anything in particular, but whatever. Sure. And these are the kind of things that I kind of wonder. Because when you're a musician and you are working real hard, you always are wondering, like, what's the thing that's missing, you know? There's always something missing. Unless you're... And even if you're Beyonce, I'm sure there's something you could do to make your next album better that you're not doing now. And so those are the kind of things that you obsess over.
Yeah.
And,
I think I don't know. No, I don't think I'm, like, afraid of my thoughts, but I do think I do listen to as much music as I do. I'm sure it'd be different if I played, but I don't play. I'm just a fan, so I've tried to absorb as much as I can.
Yeah.
And but that's kind of mine, is like I listen to as much music so I don't have to think.
Well, no, you know, it's they're both good uses of music, you know. I guess the thing is, for me, I have to, you know, like, learn a lot of music and listen to a lot of music, and there's a lot of times where I find myself almost, well, especially after a loud gig. Lately, I've been kind of dealing with tinnitus, to be honest. And, you know, quiet moments in the house or in the car are really nice when you have, you know, super loud tinnitus.
Sure.
And also sometimes if you're in this certain mode of, like, learning music, if you're transcribing music, if you have a gig coming up and you're like, go, 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 trying to learn all the songs, it kind of makes you listen to music differently. Sometimes I kind of lose the joy of it, which is just hearing the song as its own whole thing and not trying to dissect the bass part, you know, just being able to listen to it and enjoy it and letting it all melt together and wash over you, and instead of sitting there and thinking about how he's playing that, or what that changes, or whatever, or, you know, you get in that mindset, and it can be kind of hard to enjoy music. That being said, I do have phases where, you know, like you said, I need some space for my own thoughts.
Right, sure.
And I'm kind of sad to admit how reliant I am on, like, comfort tracks. You know, there's, like, the song that, like, you've heard a billion times, that if you're in a certain mood, it just is like you're a trigger to get out of it or get back into it, or, you know, it's, I don't know, I have a lot of comfort tracks that I find myself listening to over and over again, and while I'm doing it, I'm even thinking, like, I could be, like, discovering the new best thing that I, like, discovering my next best song. Maybe it's a random Colombian pop group or something, you know, I've never heard of, that would be totally outside my bubble that I'm repeating over and over again. But those comfort tracks are almost unavoidable. I don't know. I have a lot of them. And actually, the other day, I was looking at my iTunes,
and so I'm just seeing songs that have like play counts.
Yeah,
it's like a list of 15, 16 songs that have play counts like orders of magnitude higher than the rest of my entire playlist, and it's kind of embarrassing which songs they are.
Yeah,
so what, I'm not gonna tell you.
which ones? What are a couple of them?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm listening to right now. That's not an old cover track, but it's kind of a good example of my flavor of the week. So Anderson Paak has this new album called Malibu, and here's these two songs. The first two songs on the album, one's called The Bird and the other one's called Heart Don't Stand a Chance. I don't know, those two songs are probably my favorite on the album. That I found myself going back to that over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, Donnie Hathaway Live is a great comfort album for me.
Sure.
Historically speaking, you know, like every suburban white boy, I had to have my Dark Side phase. So that's probably one of my most listened to albums of all time, of course. Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
Love it. But, you know, one of my favorite, one of my comfort pop songs is Love on Top by Beyonce. Oh, thanks, baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We got Maddie Schell in the house. Say hi, Maddie.
Yeah, what up?
Maddie Schell, the River Kittens. Yeah. Bringing me nice cold beers. This is like a little idyllic family over here.
It's my job.
It's her job. She mostly brings me beers and cleans.
He doesn't let me live here if I don't.
Yeah. Yep, she's great.
Back to the jam, y'all.
Yeah, they're jamming on the front porch. My roommate Steve is a journalist. He wrote for the now deceased 11, although it may rise again, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I wish Evan and Paige the best. And there really is a vacuum of good music journalism in St. Louis now. I hope something happens. People like you are doing something about it. I guess you're on the ground. You're in the trenches, you know.
Yeah,
as they would say.
I don't know. I don't know that I'm a journalist. I don't know what exactly I'm doing.
Well, you know, you're
I'm documenting thing.
You're archival. I don't know. I don't know what you're doing either, but I like it.
Yeah,
you're talking to.
I'm just. I'm having fun. That's all I know. I'm having a great time, getting to hang out with everybody around town and getting to talk tunes and whatever, you know, just it's cool, man.
You know, there's not many people covering our scene,
right?
On that level, and you know, 288 episodes. Is that what you posted today? Right,
282 went up as we recorded this today.
Oh, nice.
I mean, that's,
and you're having a 300th,
yeah,
party coming up,
yeah.
So I mean, that's something that,
yeah, they're all.
That's a lot of work.
Sure,
and that's a lot of time spent documenting our scene and giving back to the, you know, entertainers that you enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. I have a lot of fun, and it gets me out meeting new people all the time and discovering new music right here in my hometown. And then, of course, rediscovering some stuff that, also the older stuff, too. So it's kind of fun, like, some of these have gotten me like back to where, you know, like you were saying, some of your previous bands, and that's how a lot of these are. I get to talking to somebody now and it's like, oh man, you know, I didn't realize you played with that group or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like we didn't know each other 10 years ago or whatever it is, and you know, that kind of stuff. So it's cool to kind of,
it's funny how connected the scene is. Like every time I go out, I feel like I'm kind of like weaving a web.
Trying to think of some good examples. Well, like, you know, I think you did XXX Girlfriends recently.
No, I haven't got to talk to them. I plugged some of their shows and things, but and I'm friendly with just online.
Well, at Lorefest, I ran into Nene. And you know, I know Tracy.
Yeah.
Kind of very acquaintancy.
Right.
I'm not sure if we're even friends on Facebook, but
that's how
I run into Nene, their current bass player at Whiskey War, and she's like, oh shit, I didn't know you played with River Kittens. And I was like, yeah, I didn't know you hung out down here. What's up? I'm used to running into her brother's bar out in West County. And she's like, I'm here with my band. I was like, who do you play with? And she goes, Crazy Ex-Girlfriends. And I'm like, no shit. Allie used to be the bass player in that band. And so now Nene is connected to the same band as Allie from the River Kittens. Nene is, excuse me, grew up kind of like roughly in my neighborhood. Another like middle school, elementary school aged friend, you know, who's now part of this scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people, I feel like it's, the walls are closing in on me, you know? Like, the scene, when you're younger, it's, the scene is this mysterious thing you're trying to get into,
right.
You know? And, it's surprising how fast it just is, like, a very finite thing. And every now and then you get surprised, maybe someone new moves into town, or there's a lot of people who only play in one band, but it's a great band, and they're a wonderful player, but, you know, they have a family or a job, and they've kind of compartmentalized their music life into that one band, and it's a damn good band. And so you don't meet them, especially if you're a bass player, you don't meet those guys, because you're never playing with them in sessions. You're, you know, getting called by the lead singer to sub for them, and they're not there. So you don't meet the other bass players and stuff a lot. It takes a long time. Like, this dude, Chris Turnbull, in town, plays with, like, plays a lot of people. He plays Monday Nights with Beal, with Aaron Griffin. And anyways, killing bass player. Like, love listening to this dude play. And hadn't met him for, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it's kind of weird how that happens, you know? Like, it's a killing player that, you know, if you knew about it, you probably would have been checking out. Or, whatever. And you just had no idea they existed. And they were... It's almost like parallel universe, you know? The other bass players are like the parallel universe.
Sure.
I don't know. And so you never run into them.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm trying to do a little bit with this, is like trying to let people know, they can, you know, how to discover people right here in their own town, you know? Like, there's so many people, like, that I've been trying to, you know, introduce them to, and they had no idea, like, this band or that band or whatever was in town. So, you know, that's the big goal, is trying to connect everything, kind of making it more of a real community here. And
you know, the answer is really simple. If you're trying to get into a scene, if you're trying to, if you're new to St. Louis or you're new to music and you're trying to get into the scene, it's really, the answer is simple. It's that you got to go to a lot of shows.
Yeah.
Something I know you do. I see you all over the place. You got to go to a lot of shows. I mean, shit, Beetle Bob got famous for showing up at shows and being obnoxious enough to be noticed.
Yeah, got a McDonald's commercial.
Jesus Christ. What a travesty. I'm not going to go into that today. Plead the fifth. But, you know, you have to go to a lot of shows. You have to meet everybody. You have to be available socially, you know. Because ultimately, they don't care how good you are unless you're top one percentile kind of person. Like, no one cares, you know. Sure. Like, yeah, you're good, but I'm gonna call this dude because he's who I've been calling.
Yeah,
and it works. And why would I fuck that up?
Sure.
I
had my buddy Gabe, super talented.
Bob Healy, drummer?
No, it was Gabe Stroop of a group called Skyburnt White, more alternative rocking stuff. And they, but yeah, he had, we often had the same discussion. He was, you know, he's out there doing his thing for a while and he just couldn't get people to shows. And then his buddy said the same thing to him. One day he goes, well, are you going to their shows? And he's, no. And I'm like, well, that's it, man. You know, if you want, you have to be active in this. If you want, you know, you have to go to their shows so you can get them to come to your shows and all the other stuff. I mean, you know, if you're not a part of it, like, nobody wants to help support and things too. So
that's true. I mean, you know, I had to come to that realization for my own band. You know, I used to book random shows. I'd put a band together for a night of music, or I'd go and just book a, you know, like a trio gig and just put, make it like an anything goes kind of night. I used to do a bunch of random, like at the Thurman Grill and at 1860s. I did a lot of random gigs at BB's, you know, all over. And no one ever would come.
or some musicians would come to sit in. We'd have like a pretty meager crowd unless it was like a fluke. And I kind of just had to come to the realization it wasn't that I was like an asshole or anything. I'm just not cool enough to have a draw. You know, like I go to a pretty good amount of shows. I used to. These days, I really have a lot of guilt because I don't go to enough shows.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, I would go to a lot of shows and I tried my best. And, you know, at some point you have to have something to really grab people. And there's some personalities and some people that just naturally do that. Or if the music is really next level, which when I was doing those shows, they were good jams. It was a good jazz group, but who cares? You know, you have to have something really transcendent for people to really come and really to flock and to gain people coming back every show. The River Kittens, actually, you know, before that, I've had regular fans who really were like out of every show, but it was like really a sparse thing. Blank Generation and the River Kittens are really the first bands I was in where I'd ran, like, really regularly run into people who I'd never met, who have, like, heard the music enough to sing along and, like, you know, diehard fans. At the River Kittens, there's people who I see every single show, who drive out of town to see us. River Kittens are kind of a phenomenon to me because I've just never had such a consistent drawing band. And I think that the key is every one of those girls are really good friends to a lot of people. And they go to a lot of shows. They not only go to a lot of shows, but they're really good friends with the people in the scene and have been. Maddie is just so connected. It's crazy. I feel like everywhere we go, I'm like running into her friends, and they're all successful creatives.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Like, I don't know what it is about that town she's from, but all of her friends seem to be really successful creative and awesome creative people. And, you know, Martha's the same way. She's a Cherokee stable. She plays in Richie Kilkin band. She goes across scenes, and she's really social and has a lot of fun. And Allie's the same way. She seems to know everyone. And her boyfriend, Neil, probably just one of the most stand-up dudes I know. Also, yeah. Martha's dating the drummer from...
Brotherly Danny.
And Danny is another example of one of those people who... Not only, well, luckily his band's awesome, so I'd go to just to see Brotherly Rise.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd go to the show to see Danny, because he's fun to be around. Like, it's not even about their show. It is, because it's a good one. But it's not just about that. It's about going to hang out with them. Yeah. And this is the easy way, casual way. You don't have to call them and see if they want to hang out. You can right. just go and surprise them.
Yeah.
Really, you're paying an entry fee to go hang out in a cool space.
Definitely.
With your friends. And the River Kittens just have so many friends.
Yeah.
And, but it seems like, I don't know what they've hit on that makes it so different than the other bands I've been in terms of draw, but it's certainly nice.
Yeah. They got a good thing going. It's really exciting to see and watch, you know, this whole thing take off. It's cool, man.
Yeah, we're working on our second album right now.
Very nice.
Well, I say we, I mean the girls are writing it. Me and John are just, you know, waiting for them to bring it to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were also telling me you're part of a new project. You're Wildwood Green Arts, you said?
Yeah, so the idea started a few years ago. My mom passed 2 years ago now. And, you know, my dad was working as a project developer for this big multinational company. And, you know, it was very thankless, soulless work. And he was doing it so he could, you know, afford my mom's medical care. And after she passed, we had some space. And we realized that he didn't want to do that the rest of his life until he retired. He's always been a potter. He's always been a ceramicist and a sculptor and stuff. Before that, he was a, you know, horticulturalist and a designer of sorts. And I guess he just made the decision that he wanted to be intimately involved in the arts and in creating things again. Tangible things, not, you know, PowerPoint presentations for... I don't know how it works in companies. I don't get it. I've never been in one. But either way, he after my mom passed, he didn't need that income in the same way anymore, and so he quit his job, and we went back to our family farm where we've lived for the past more or less since the 60s. My grandma lives on the farm. My aunt and uncle live on the farm. Me and my dad live on the farm. 65 acres of mostly woods, big hills and woods out in Wildwood, Missouri, right on the border of St. Louis County and Franklin County. We bought it before it was Wildwood, back when it was just empty, nothing. Bought it for a song. And we used to run a retail nursery out there. We had Gilbert Perennial Farms. We sold all sorts of different perennials and trees, shrubs, garden center. We had koi. We had a huge garden center. It was really popular. And it was kind of a beloved thing. People still would come years after we closed, thinking we were open, and just like knock on my door and stuff. And so anyway, we came back to that property, and it was kind of a mess. Around 10 years of neglect, because when my mom got cancer, we shut the doors of the nursery and stopped it. And there was around 10 years of neglect. It's like that show After Humans, or have you seen it? It was like on History Channel. It's like, what happens after humans leave? We were all going to disappear. Yeah. Like, and it's like the city's crumbling, and like the vines are growing over everything. Anyway, that's what my farm looked like. We had all these outbuildings and all these beautiful gardens and, you know, stone pathways and all this, you know, hardscaping and stuff all over. Ponds and waterfalls and gardens. It looked like a botanical garden out there. And we let that rot for 10 odd years. And so it was just a gargantuan task, removing all the, you know, honeysuckle and the invasive trees and shrubs that had come in. You know, we probably pulled out the equivalent of like 10 or 15 of those big 40-foot dumpsters. Just an amazing amount of work. My dad completely rehabbed the building to be a full-service ceramic studio. So at this point, we're like a year and a half in of planning and construction. And just this week, my dad hosted his first ceramic class.
Nice.
And we had a full house. We're selling the classes. He's doing a great job. I, unfortunately, am not at all involved in the ceramics art education at all. He is the sole person involved in that. I am working on right now getting the music and working with our partner, Soul Gold Photography, Justin Mariah Mayfield, two wonderful artists who moved into the farm last year and been helping us with all of our media work. We're going to start a photography section. Well, Justin's also a wonderful musician. He's a singer, songwriter, piano player. And so we're going to partner for a music and photography space. We're in the process of rehabbing the space right now. Hopefully we're going to get it done in the next month or two and be open, be ready for next spring with music and photography classes. And the idea, though, long-term, is to turn this space. We have 65 acres of woods and prairies. We have several outbuildings. We have a lot of space. There's several homes on the property. And the home I live in, or my dad lives in, I should say, I live in South City. We're in my living room right now, by the way, listeners. My dad lives, it's actually like a log cabin built in 1840. All exposed logs and everything. It's a bizarre house. It seriously is like a... Every room is a totally different space. I don't know. I can't explain it. It's a bizarre house. Yeah. And it's very, very old. And everything's really kind of telling a story of the history of the house, because it's been renovated probably 10 times over the course of the past 180 years. The art center hopefully is going to evolve into kind of an art retreat. I want to have lodging for artists in residence or guests. And right now we're doing social nights where people can come for a small fee and get throw pots. And we're going to have jam sessions and bonfires and just, you know, generally have a good time and create while we're doing. We're going to have pottery going on. We're going to have music going on. And long term, we're going to have hopefully as many disciplines as we can cram into the space. Right now, we already have are in talks with a metal worker and a woodworker. So, you know, really sky's the limit because we have an unlimited amount of space and the permitting to do a lot of stuff.
Very cool.
But yeah, so right now the pilot program's the ceramics, and so far it's going great. We've exceeded our quota for classes, and people are having fun, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
The other part of it is that, you know, the people who are involved in the creation of it, Dave Warner and Karen Krieger, among many others, Jim Iber from Merrimack Community College, the list goes on and on. They're all really passionate artists. They're like us for music. This is what they do for their release. This is their the thing they do for fun. And the ultimate goal of the space at Wild Green Arts is just to enable people to have that release. If you're an artist, if you're a serious professional artist, our goal is to make it easier for you to do that. So we're going to be offering really reasonable gallery space, lower commissions than a lot of the other galleries in St. Louis, and hopefully create space to actually you know, directly enable you to create your work. So you know, it's a project you should keep your eye on. Sure. You should check in with. If you've never made pottery before, you know, it's a great way to really have a tactile experience that's really rewarding and create something that's not only beautiful, but you're going to use it every day. I mean, if you look in my cabinet, there's hundreds of mugs. my cabinet at my dad's house. There's probably a dozen mugs of his in this cabinet. And, you know, the beautiful thing is, every day I get to use something nice and handmade that was, I know, my dad made. And, you know, he's no spring chicken. After he's gone, I'm still going to have the mugs.
Sure.
And, you know, it's an intimate part of your daily life that a lot of people take for granted. But these basic tools and things in your life can be really meaningful. And I think pottery is a great way to get to that. I'm just no good at it, personally. Right. Music's how I do that. And I'm sure photography is how some people do that. And woodworking's the way other people do that. And so the thing that's really going to be interesting for me is when we have these multiple disciplines set up at the Green Arts Center, watching them intersect. You know, is the woodworker going to build speaker cabinets for the music section? Is the cooking instructor going to use cookware made by the pottery people? You know, are the students at the music department going to make our new jingle? You know what I mean? It's this intersection of all these different mediums that really excites me, and I just can't wait to get it up and running.
Yeah,
because seeing the ceramic section be so successful is really kind of emboldened us for the music and the photography and all the other disciplines.
Yeah. Where can people get involved? Is there any website and stuff?
Yeah, we have Facebook, Instagram, and a website. Wildwood Green Arts is a way to find us if you want to Google us, or find us on Facebook. It's Wildwood Green Arts. You know, we do a lot of posts. Also involved that is Soul Gold Studios. It's Jess Mariah's photography studio. They do all of our media stuff, so, you know, a lot of the pictures you're going to be seeing are going to be done by Dave Warner or Justin Mariah. They do some wonderful... one thing to look for that they did that I really enjoyed was... this year was really hot and really wet, and it was a great year for mushrooms. We had a wonderful chanterelle haul and pretty meager morel haul this year, but they did a photo essay in my woods of all the native mushrooms. And they must have found, you know, 50 or 60 different varieties, and they did some really wonderful nature photography.
Nice.
Of cataloging the flora of my woods. And that's something that really excites me about the Green Arts Center, too, is just having the space that nature, being in nature, allows you to create, to get some peace in your head. It's something I've kind of gotten away from living in the city and not having the time for hikes and just basic alone time in nature. It's something that is really nourishing, and that if you don't have in your life, can really be draining, the absence of it.
Right.
And I'm feeling that right now, and so I'm really excited to get the Green Arts Center to the stage where I can justify being out there more often, doing the music thing. So right now I'm mostly doing construction work and planning the building.
Right.
The music building. It's about halfway done. So.
Nice, man. Well, that's exciting stuff. I wish you the best of luck with all that. That's,
thank you, man. Thank you.
Well, you said you had some tunes you want to throw on here. Get
Let's see some
rarities, maybe.
All right. This first track is just a jam recording. It's something you're never going to hear anywhere else. It's just going to be a Rock Paper Podcast exclusive.
And we need like a reggae air horn or something. You know, like
Rock Paper Podcast exclusive. Yeah, it's just some fucking underground shit, dude. So I was talking about Matt Rowland earlier, and this is something that I think really showcases the strength of his guitar playing. I think it's the file called Matt Jam.
Yeah.
It's a just a really dead simple jam song that I came up with, and it's just a kind of a weird rhythmic thing, and it really showcases Matt's guitar playing. He takes a crazy solo over this song that happens to be an 11/8 over changes at pretty good tempo, and he just knocks it out of the park. I think on drums is Jairus Yokley. He's a drummer from St. Louis, who's now living in New York. I went to Berkeley with him. Played some gigs with him in St. Louis before he left for Berkeley. He's probably one of the just greatest drummers I've ever played with. It's always been an honor and a pleasure to play with him. Me and him were in the Ralph Butler Band together for a while before I moved to New York. And he's just a really unique drummer who's just humble. A joy to be around. Another one of those guys who's, you know, somehow got the perfect mix of professionalism and being a good dude and sounding great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a song we recorded at Eightfold Studios just on a whim. We had some free time and we decided to have a little fun studio session and record some random stuff that we would never really do anything with, except for just, you know. Sometimes it's nice to get in and do some mess around in the studio.
Definitely.
So this is something I've been sitting on for a while, like maybe 6 months, and I don't know, I think it's pretty fun. So
cool, man. And then we got anything else you'd you said you had one with
oh yeah, that's that. So this is kind of also in line with what we were talking about earlier with new friends and old friends and how music scene being based on friends. Me and Andrew lived together in Boston and were friends in Boston after we moved out, and he recorded some tracks that at the time, I don't know what they were for. We were just having fun in his apartment. And I don't know, years later he kind of released a little album, and I guess the theme of the album, it was called Making Friends. And I guess the theme of the album was all the people he had recorded these tracks with. It was kind of meandering tracks he recorded in different places with different people over the years. Were people he had lost contact with. So it was like an album of like old friend jams that you don't talk to anymore.
Right.
And he kind of posted online, and it was like a way to like, hey guys, I'm still here. Are you still there? Can we be friends again? You know, and I think it worked.
Sure.
So yeah, that's
That's the second track.
Okay. I'm
trying to remember the name of it. I can picture the whole song in my head, but I can't picture the name.
Right.
It's the Harden Your...
Yeah, you'll get it. We'll figure it out.
That's Andrew Royal, who produced it.
Yeah, he sent me...
Yeah, I had to get those on Bandcamp. They wouldn't let me download them.
All right. Then, so for live shows, they can come see you on November 5th. You guys will be at Off-Broadway for Jack Growley's record release with the River Kittens.
Yeah, the River Kittens are going to be there. And I got a lot of kind of random sub-gigs coming up between them, between now and then. You know, I do stuff with Delta Soul Revival, be in Lawrence, Kansas with them. And some random odds private stuff here and there.
Sure.
But yeah, kind of a light season for me right now as far as public appearances. So
yeah. Well, but of course they can get online and follow Rich Kilkin Band, River Kittens, Spider Express, Blank Generation. All those bands have Facebook pages and things. You can get involved there and
sure do.
And keep an eye on all the dates and stuff. So, and I'll, if anything pops up before this goes up, I'll be sure to tag it all on my website and things too to tag.
Sounds good, man.
But yeah, man, just thank you so much for taking some time out, man. It's been cool.
Anytime, dude. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. So yeah, catch Nathan all around town, or Nate all around town.
You can call me Nathan.
Yeah,
it's fine. Some call me Graham.
All right.
That'd be good.
Yeah. But you can catch them all around town with these bands. All of them up to really great stuff. So, and if you haven't picked up the River Kittens record, the EP, go do so today.
It's on iTunes. It's on Spotify.
Now on Pandora Radio.
Yeah. Pandora Radio. Make yourself a River Kittens radio station. Like all of our songs, whatever. I don't know. You could also just send us money. All those things work.
Sure.
You can send us money if you want us to send you a physical album. I'm not just asking for free money. But yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, man. I will I'll see you out there.
Right on.
All right.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, buddy.
No worries. Oof.
So deep is the heartbeat. Personify me. You can't deny we do not die, but energy we multiply. The universe, the skies, the land, the water.